Hi, and welcome to the 64th episode of the Language Mandarins podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today my special guest on the show is Agnieszka Mordach of 5 Minute Language. She has a lot of wonderful language learning tips that she shares on her website and on her Facebook page. And in 2015, her blog was voted out of the top 25 language learning blogs. Hers was ranked number 5. It's great to have you on the show, Agnieszka.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan. Really great to be here.
Likewise, it's a pleasure. Could you tell me a little bit how your blog got started? What were some of the inspiration, some of the motivation for putting online your language learning process and teaching?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was actually reflecting on it the other day, and kind of reflecting on the journey I've been on with the blog, and I was basically trying to kind of step back and evaluate and see what's worked and what hasn't worked, and that kind of forced me to actually go back and remember what happened that sort of motivated me to create the blog. And I looked at the blog's archives, and I looked at the first ever post that I published there, which was actually, I don't know if the people who have read the blog will know this, but it was actually a blog about Polish. And the initial idea that was born in my head was actually to set up a blog which would be about teaching basic Polish to people who are sort of non-Polish native speakers. So that was my kind of initial idea, and I think the reason why I was motivated to do that was because, as a Polish person living in the UK, I could see that there was an audience, I guess, a group of people who wanted to learn the language, and it wasn't something that I'd ever would have imagined that anyone would want to learn a language of people who live in a country with 38 million people in it. So, but obviously, with so many people in you know, living in other countries, their partners want to learn Polish, and their friends want to learn Polish, and yeah, I just thought it would be a way for me to kind of share and kind of, I always felt a kind of interest in teaching languages. I actually did a teaching course, which is called CELTA. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I think you might be familiar with it.
Yeah, the CELTA, yeah. I think that's with Cambridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know whether it works in the same way in the US, but this is something that in Europe is quite common for people to take when they want to teach English. So I did spend some time teaching English as a foreign language, and I really enjoyed it. I taught kids. I thought it was quite tiring at times, but I found it really enjoyable to be able to share my passion for languages with other people. So I think that was the other part of 5 Minute Language. And then I kind of stopped blogging for a while, and then I came back to it again because I realized that the things I'd been doing in between were not really my true passion. So I think what I really wanted to do was to encourage other people to learn languages and to do it even if they feel that, especially I think if they feel quite overwhelmed by the prospect of learning another language. And so the 5 minute language idea, to make it kind of less overwhelming, to help people understand that they can actually, you know, make marginal gains, that when you put them together at the end of the process, they really make a difference. And I think that's the main kind of part of the 5 minute language philosophy, that you can actually live the language and you don't have to, you know, spend hours every week learning just a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying that you should spend 5 minutes essentially, but I guess that's just, sorry, there's an ambulance going past, so you might be able to hear that. Yeah, so I think that's the beginnings of the blog.
Cool. Yeah, I wish I had come across this 8 years ago when I was trying to learn some Polish before my first trip to Krakow. How it's evolved into more languages, and I think it is definitely accessible to a wider audience. Have you continued with the Polish aspect, or has that been put to the side, or how do you see which languages do you mostly promote on your blog?
So so initially when I sort of started blogging again, which was about 18 months ago, I decided not to focus on Polish too much, precisely because I wanted to kind of reach a wider audience of people and focus more on kind of effective language learning techniques and the kind of idea of learning effectively, efficiently, optimizing your learning. So I think that was what I was doing at the start, and that's something that I'm still committed to doing. But since then, I've kind of covered different languages that I have learned myself. So I think the main focus, I would say, is French and Spanish. These are the languages that I'm the most familiar with, other than English and Polish, and more recently Japanese. But I haven't got as much content, as much sort of language-specific content as I would like to. So I'll be focusing more on that in the next few months. I've also got some Polish content planned, so I think that's going to be. I'm going to talk a bit more about that maybe in the next couple of months. But there is some Polish content coming soon. That's all I can say.
Okay, I can just say bardzo dobrze. Looking forward to that with the content. And
yes, I say I'm very happy.
and for the 5-minute approach, do you give workshops with motivating busy language learners? Because I think I've seen that as well, that you've done a couple workshops as well.
So I haven't done any sort of workshops as such. There was an idea for a workshop that never actually happened. I have worked with language learners on a kind of more one-to-one basis. Yes, I think that's in terms of workshops. I'm kind of planning. I just done my first webinar recently, and at the moment I'm advertising my second webinar, and that's something that I've really enjoyed so far, and something that I would like to continue with. I think I'm going to be kind of focusing on that going forward. Rather than any kind of physical workshops, although I would love to do that. I think it's just a question of checking whether there is demand for that, whether people actually want to go to workshops like that. So yeah,
I mean live training or live phone call or workshop or webinar, however people are calling them, I think having them online does provide access to a lot of people, whereas in you do have to population, local students.
Absolutely.
And how was that experience with the webinar? What was your kind of process to go through that to develop it, and how do you see that going forward?
So I found the experience to be very enjoyable but also quite challenging. So I essentially want to provide something that would be very sort of practical, so very, very, very practical and very kind of actionable. So I think there's definitely a difference between writing a blog post and running a webinar. When you write a blog post, you try to make it as practical as possible, and you try to make it as engaging as possible, but it's kind of beyond your control what people are going to take away from it, how they're going to sort of consume this content. So, you know, they might see it on Facebook and they will look at the headline, and that's the kind of takeaway that they will take from it. They might read the whole thing, but you don't know. Whereas with a webinar, I guess the job is a bit more complicated, because you want to keep your viewers engaged for the kind of duration of the webinar. So I think my main goal was to, just make it practical and say something different to what people may have already read online. So I think there's just so much stuff on different blogs already that it was quite a challenge to find topics that were not sort of covered maybe enough. So I decided to focus on, it was a webinar about learning vocabulary, so I decided to focus on a couple of sort of specific techniques that I use that are maybe not as covered as in sort of the blogosphere as other techniques. So yeah, but it was a very enjoyable experience. And in terms of going forward, I have got a webinar advertised already on my Facebook page, which is going to be about speaking a foreign language with confidence. So it's going to focus on kind of developing your confidence, developing your kind of learning strategies that will enable you to really embed speaking into your practice, and kind of finding ways of moving forward when you're stuck with a conversation. So these are going to be the kind of 3 points. So again, I'm trying to kind of make it practical and as useful as possible, which is always a challenge, but hopefully that will work.
I really like the topic for your second webinar. That's basically the focus of my first teachable course that I'm working on currently, of confidence building. And this is kind of a result I've seen of teaching students for over, is sometimes the lessons, just grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation, and suddenly we start to becoming more familiar with their speak, whether they feel kind of like social interactions, and if there's even some kind of trauma, if they've been embarrassed in the past from other teachers, and trying to get past those psychological barriers. Sometimes you have people who are afraid to speak in public. And so some people have looked at me coming back as like, you're not just a language teacher, you're my psychologist, you're my weekly coach. And I've said, like, seriously, I'm the teacher. So with those classes, with some of those students over the years, there's been an opportunity to kind of just, what really is the ultimate objective with the language class? Is it just to learn the grammar, the vocabulary, the pronunciation, or is it to do something with the language? So really, that's helped me as a teacher, kind of like this language is just a tool so they can accomplish something else with their business goals, their study abroad opportunities, and this obstacle of confidence is usually something that once they turn that on, language is mainly kind of incidental. As long as they stay confident and stay motivated, they will want to work on any big dream I've envisioned. So I look forward to seeing your webinar about that, to see what your approach is.
Yeah, and I really look forward to hearing more about your course, and I think that's great. That's a great idea for a course, and I'm sure, you know, people will identify with this struggle, because I totally believe that, you know, confidence is the first step, and you can't really learn if you don't believe that you can learn. And, you know, no matter how cliche that might sound, you actually have to believe that you can do it. And yeah, I'm sure there are practical ways to develop this confidence, as I'm sure you know, because you've been working on this course. So yeah, really looking forward to hearing more about it.
Oh, thank you. I have to say, I was in part inspired to go about the creation process for the course because I saw yours. I signed up for your teachable course, the Language Learner Pro, when you had that come out, I think about a month ago. So you've had a lot of really great advice about the language learning mindset, the goal setting, effective strategies for reading, listening, speaking. So I think you have a lot of great advice for that. And there's been a couple other teachable courses that I've seen. So that's been a really good inspiration to, well, if others out there, language teachers out there can do this, then this might be a good platform.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for the feedback.
It's been a pleasure to see your content. And how long was that creation process? How did you go about deciding to do the course?
Yeah, so it was quite a long process this time around. So I'm actually working on a new course at the moment, and it's going much, much more quickly. So I can kind of see all the mistakes I made with the kind of creation, not the product itself, but the kind of process of creating the content. So kind of, I guess last time around, it just took ages to kind of come up with the ideas and really think through the structure and the scripts. And, you know, once I got there, I was happy with the final product, but it was just a long process. It took about 12 months to develop. So yeah, and I couldn't decide on the focus at the start. So I think, yeah, but I think in the end I got there and I'm pleased with the outcome. But I guess with any kind of subsequent courses, it will be easier because I know the platform. As you said, I'm using Teachable for that, and it's a very kind of intuitive platform. So I guess one reason why it took me so long to create the last one was because I was kind of learning to use the platform as well and kind of trying to find ways to present the content as effectively as possible.
What are some of the things that you would say if I'd gone back 12 months ago and was doing the creation process from the start, what would be some of your things you would do differently or approaches that you would do differently for the course creation process?
I think, so essentially the course is about effective language learning strategies. So it's quite a broad topic, and I would say it's my kind of top tips that I have developed through learning languages myself throughout my life. And it's quite a big topic because you've got all these experiences with different languages that you've tried, and you're trying to kind of put all of this stuff together. But I think really what you need to do is to kind of choose what it is that you're trying to achieve. And I think this is something I try to do with languages or any other kind of project I work on, which is thinking about the goal and really kind of almost working backwards from that goal to you know, that you want to get to. So really having a clear goal in mind. So when I started creating the course, I had lots of different ideas and I created lots of modules. And then I realized actually, you know, perhaps this is material for another course. And this is, you know, I've got several different courses in here. So you kind of have to decide what is your priority, what is the content that you really, that this particular type of student will actually be interested in. You can't make everyone happy at the same time, I think. So I think that was one of my learnings, I guess.
And did you contact through your email list to kind of send people surveys and ask them what they were struggling with, what they had trouble working on? Because I've seen a couple marketers like Mariah Cause and Brian Harris and Melissa Griffin talking about with the whole course creation process of ask the questions, figure out what what your clients, what your students want, and then build that in response to that process. How was your process? How did you manage that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an essential part of creating any type of content, I would say. So it doesn't just apply to the course, it applies to all the work I do essentially as part of 5 Minute Language. So the blog posts I write, the way the newsletters I write, the stuff I do on social media as well. And I think it's quite a difficult task, but it's essential, in my opinion, to kind of constantly listen and constantly monitor the kind of language learner's world, to look for clues as to what people want to learn, but they don't know how to do it. What are the kind of particular challenges? So I did ask my community for input several times. I mean, you don't always get kind of as many responses as you would want to, but you know, the ones I have had were very useful. And yeah, I think it's part of kind of bigger process of social listening, I guess, just looking at what's going on Facebook and Twitter and what kind of questions people are asking. So I think, yeah, in terms of creating courses, the advice I would give to anyone who's thinking of creating a course would be identify the problem, because you need to be solving somebody else's problem. You can't convince them that they have this problem, if you know what I mean. That's not your role as a teacher or language coach. You need to find evidence that somebody thinks this is a struggle for them. Otherwise, you're just creating a product and you're telling people, listen, you've got this problem and I've got the solution, but they'll be like, I don't really have this problem. So it is tricky, but I think that's definitely a trend at the moment, from what I can see in the community and among the kind of internet entrepreneurs, I guess, that they start with the end in mind. So what is the problem? And then thinking about solutions around that rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I had not attended many of these webinars that I've seen lately about the course creation process and developing email lists and all these techniques for developing the blog, and yeah, I had just gone about it like my own way, it would probably have been, okay, I'm going to develop something by myself in a dark cave 6 months later and say, here is something that everybody should have, and then nobody wants it because I didn't ask anybody. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important what you're saying of being very perceptive, receptive to what people are saying in the community, or maybe not saying explicitly. Maybe they might be hinting at it. Mm-hmm. So, Jane, I think there's observations even from like Steve Jobs of like people don't know what they want. So mm-hmm. you kind of sometimes give them something and then they realize they want it. So there is a balance between, I definitely agree what you say, like, okay, you have a problem and then they deny that and then they don't want, then you get an argument of trying to promote a problem.
And I think I'm sure you probably know this as a language teacher, but in my experience of kind of dealing with language learners, a language learner they come to you because you're a teacher and they expect you to tell them how to learn. So they're not gonna be able to say, I need to learn French, so I'm gonna now spend, you know, 2 hours every day learning the subjunctive form. They don't know what their problem is really sometimes. So I think, you know, your role as a teacher, I guess, is to help them sort of identify the problem that they kind of, I don't know how to sort of explain this, but I guess they know they have a problem because they're not moving forward, but they can't quite identify what that problem is. So I think your role as a teacher or a course creator is to kind of help them define that problem. And then when you talk to them about it, they say, yes, that's right. You know, yes, I'm not confident. I'm scared of speaking, and that's my main blocker. And then I guess once you've got to that point, that's when you offer solutions, and they can see that, yes, this is the solution that actually solves my problem.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of like detective work, or even like as a doctor, I can imagine like episodes of Dr. House where I have this symptom, but really what's causing that? And mm-hmm. is it really what we see on the surface? So do we just fix that immediate, what seems obvious, or you have to dig deeper? And in a lot of the confidence, I think that's like, these are just symptoms that I see with the language, and then I kind of dig deeper and I see there's like mm-hmm. a confidence issue here. So let's resolve that one. That seems to be underlying all of these other things. So it is a lot of detective work. It is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Difficult sometimes. I'm kind of in this transition right now of, do I call myself a teacher? Do I call myself a coach? And when the traditional aspect of like a teacher is like, I'm going to teach you things. And as I go into some of my classroom sessions, and I just kind of want the teacher to stop talking for a minute and say, okay, this is what I'm struggling with today. Can we work on this? I know you prepared something that you wanted to teach to me. That's great. Thank you. I appreciate it. But how about we work on this? This is what I'm struggling with today. And I'd like somebody to kind of hold her and help me out with what I have like a problem with. And then when I flip that around and try to teach some people, I try to step back a little bit more and say like, help you, not just impose some content that they don't need or that they're not interested in. And it's difficult. I think people still have a certain a teacher is a different perspective of a coach.
Yeah, I absolutely understand what you're saying. And I think at the same time, you want to keep them on track, because you know what their goals are, and you know that, you know, as a teacher, you need to get them to those goals. So I guess, you know, you want to support them in whatever they're struggling with at that point, whilst also trying to keep them on track, which is quite challenging.
Mm-hmm. What would are some of your favorite resources for kind of goal setting, goal tracking, creating projects, prioritizing them?
So I'm quite a big fan of apps, but I don't like having too many of them. So I've essentially been using an app called Trello, which I use for kind of project management, but also for learning languages. I know it's a project management app, but I actually use it for my to-do lists as well, and for tracking my progress with different kind of things I'm trying to do and learn. So I think that's a good one. I've actually got a sort of download on my blog, which is a list of 9 apps that support language learning. So they're not language learning apps like Duolingo or Memrise, but they're apps which can be used for making your language learning more kind of effective. So if anyone is interested in that, then head to 5-Minute Language and you can download it there. But yeah, I would say Trello is the one I've used. I also use Google Sheets, so I'm quite, I guess, old-fashioned with that. But for my kind of content creation for the course I'm working on at the moment, that's what I'm using, and it's working fine. 5-Minute Language is still a kind of small business, so I don't have to sort of liaise with other people on projects, so that's working fine for now.
And with your, say you don't have to necessarily keep other people involved in those projects, but how do you hold yourself accountable for your project? How do you know, okay, I have this course idea, I have this blog post. How do you kind of keep yourself focused as a language learner, as a blogger?
Yeah, it's difficult. And I think it's something that I always kind of struggled with in the past, because I'm the kind of person who's interested in lots of different things. And I like picking up languages. I'm sure if you follow 5 Minute Language, you may have seen my Swedish language challenge, which I did last year. And I never completed. So that was an example of me kind of, you know, not being committed enough to finishing something I started. But since then, I've been working on my focus and trying to really focus at one thing at a time, essentially one project. And that's massively helpful. I mean, obviously, I need to juggle the blog and the social media and the course creation at the moment. But yeah, I just try to focus on one thing. And I think with languages, it's particularly, I mean, you can, of course, learn several languages at the same time if that's something you want to do. And I have done that in the past as well. But at the moment, I'm focusing on Japanese, so I'm trying to kind of nail the basics and move on once that's done. So I also like setting myself goals, of course, and kind of monitoring those. And I think one reason I've kind of identified as a reason why a lot of language learners give up or they lose motivation is because they're not tracking their progress. So either they're not setting goals or they're not sort of monitoring their progress, celebrating the things they've done well. So that's one thing I've been trying to do that kind of gives me extra motivation to be able to see, oh, I've actually learned 5 new words this week, that kind of thing.
And how's Japanese? Because I think you have a lot of experience with the European languages. What motivated you to kind of branch out into starting with Asian languages?
So I'm going to say probably quite a boring thing, which is I had a plan to go to Japan. So my husband and I were thinking of, you know, our next holidays, and we thought, you know, what's the place that we both find really exciting and different, and Japan was on the list. So we thought, okay, let's go. And that was the reason why, because I had, I believe I had 3 months before, between when we booked and when we were going. And I thought, you know, why not? I can't go to a country and not know anything about the language. So I started learning it, and I really, really enjoy the process of learning this strange language that I never thought I would learn. It's a completely different sort of mental process for me, because of the syntax and the writing, of course, the way the language works, but also the kind of cultural aspects of how the language works. It works completely differently to European languages. You know, there are different levels of formality. There are different words depending on how formal you want to be, and the kind of sentence structure is relatively simple, I would say, at this point. I mean, apparently it starts easy and then it gets really difficult, so I might, if we're talking in a year's time, I might say something completely different. But it's a bit of a kind of riddle, and that's what fascinates me, and that's what motivates me to learn it, because I've got that kind of brain where I need to kind of work things out and figure out how they work. And it's a really interesting culture as well. You know, when I was there, I absolutely loved it. I just loved watching people and learning about the culture.
Yeah, I definitely relate with the kind of discovering a puzzle, putting the pieces together, figuring out how the language works, how the culture works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that process. I think it's some of the kind of, it's almost like phase of discovering the language and then becoming this is the only language I'm going to learn for the rest of my life. And then suddenly it gets complicated, and then there's a lover's quarrel, and then people part ways.
And it really opens your mind, doesn't it? Because you kind of, well, the first time actually I had a very mind-opening experience about languages was when I went to the Polyglot Gathering in Berlin last year. And I never really met that many people before who were learning kind of non-European languages, to be honest. I think I was just kind of isolated from those people. I don't know where they suddenly came from. But I guess, you know, in London, living in London, there's lots of different languages, but I never really come across, you know, people who were learning a language that was so different to theirs. And then I went to Berlin, and you know, there were people there who were learning sort of minority languages from very small countries, or languages that are kind of slowly disappearing even. And that really opens your mind and kind of shows you that you don't actually have to have a reason. So that's why I said it's going to be a bit boring when I say, oh, I learned a bit of Japanese because I was going to Japan. So that was a very practical reason. But, you know, there are so many people who learn languages without having any practical reason whatsoever. And that's just amazing. It just shows how committed they are and excited. And it's brilliant. Mm.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit more about the Polyglot Gathering, the experience that you had there? So that you didn't have a chance to go this year, if I understand.
No, I didn't, unfortunately. Didn't make it.
Well, I as I understand, lots of replays on YouTube, so I'm looking forward to those. Have you attended the Polyglot conference at all? I think that's like in October each year.
Yeah, no, I've never been. I'd like to go at some point. So I think it used to happen in New York until recently. I think the next one is in Greece. But no, I wasn't aware of the whole sort of Polyglot thing until relatively recently, maybe 2 years ago. I just had no idea there was such a big community of people who wanted to learn lots of different languages. So I'm quite new to this. Oh, wow. And Berlin was my first real kind of experience with it. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to go this year, but I will definitely try and go next year. I guess when you're in Europe.
Forward to going.
Yeah.
It's definitely easier for you in Europe for me to plan in advance from Mexico to get to Europe. It's quite a lot of planning and a lot of budgeting, but I'm hoping to use the Add One Challenge if possible to win a plane ticket with my Russian courses, or if there's a possibility. I saw that with Brian Kwong with the 16th group that is just opening. I think they had a collaboration with Richard Simcott and Alex Rawlings, that they would offer the possibility of an entrance to the conference in October in Thessaloniki. And then if they're studying Greek, they could have an opportunity to, if they won, basically if they won the ticket, they could choose to go to Greece. So. My Russian involvement in the 15th group has been going pretty well. I've been studying Russian for like the last 40-50 days and making daily YouTube videos speaking in Russian. So that's been going well. I might pick up Greek for that. So if I could win a plane ticket, that'd be awesome. But, what is your blog address again, just in case people didn't hear that?
Okay, yes. So if you want to find out more about 5 Minute Language, it's 5minutelanguage.com. It's easy. I've also got a Facebook page, which is also called 5 Minute Language, with the digit 5 rather than the word, so 5 Minute Language. And Yeah, and these are the kind of main places. If you want to check out the course, which is called Language Learner Pro, then feel free to do that. Or if you have any questions, just get in touch on Facebook and I can answer them. But yeah, Language Learner Pro is, there's a link from the homepage on the blog, so you will be able to find it there if you're interested.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend people check it out. I've signed up for it and I've gone through the course content. So Agnieszka's got a lot of great strategies, and as she has explained already earlier in this interview, a lot of her tips that she's acquired over the years through teaching and through learning languages. So definitely check it out. And so I hope to stay in touch with you and perhaps have you back on the show later on. It'd be great to talk with you again. So thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks very much for having me on the podcast, Jonathan. It's been a pleasure getting to know you a bit better and just being able to kind of talk about languages. I'm always happy to share my tips and generally just chat to people about languages, because that's what I'm interested in. So yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Oh yeah, it was a pleasure. So take care, and we'll see you guys in the next podcast.